great conference and for giving me the chance to be here. So today I'll talk about recent work with Gil Yangchou, who is a former grad student in UC Berkeley. Right now he's a postdoc in UIUC and also with Ashwin. So first, I would like to briefly introduce a little bit of history about how Z2-SPIN liquid emerges in cognitive antiferromagnets. And then I will use Tori code as a simple example to illustrate a certain symmetry property of Z2-SPIN liquids and to show a connection between a fractional symmetry quantum number in a Z2-SPIN liquid and a symmetry property edge states in a Z2-SPIN liquid. And then I'm going to use this connection established here, apply this connection to two type of variational wave function for Z2-SPIN liquid. And the other so-called Schringer boson wave function, Avery Kossel fermion wave functions. And this will give rise to a unification of Z2-SPIN liquid on the cognitive lattice. Okay. So of course, as condensed matter physicists, we're all motivated by emergence in complex systems. So an example is Herbert-Smith site. So in such a system, the low energy degree freedom are described by spin 1/2 living on the copper ions. The copper ions form a cognitive lattice in two dimensions, in two-dimensional layers, separated by zinc atoms in other layers. So magnetic susceptibility experiments show that the system doesn't exhibit any magnetic order down to 50 millikelvin. On the other hand, a rough estimation of the super exchange interaction has the order of 200 Kelvin. So the ratio between exchange interaction and the upper bound of ordering temperature is around 4,000. So that suggests the system is highly frustrated. So the minimal model describing such a system is the Heisenberg model, nearest neighbor Heisenberg model of spin 1/2 living on a cognitive lattice. What really excited us is a recent progress in the numerical study of this, model. This model, although it looks simple, there's no way we can track it down analytically. But numerically recently, using a DMRG approach, Yang, Hughes, and White shows that the ground state of such a system is a gapped paramagnet, which doesn't break any symmetry. So so it doesn't have magnetic order. Spin rotation symmetry is preserved. And doesn't break time Russell symmetry. And it preserves all the translation symmetry in the system. So we know the system is a Morton insulator with 3 spin 1/2 per unit cell. So, and knowing all these facts that it doesn't break symmetry and doesn't have gap phase excitation, due to a very powerful theorem by Hastings, which is the generalization of one-dimensional Lipschitz-Matte theorem, we know that in the ground state of a system, there must be topological order. In other words, the system supports fractional statistics in their excitation, in their quasi-particles. In other words, the quasi-particle doesn't obey neither boson nor fermion statistics. They obey a fractional statistics. The system would also support a ground state degeneracy on a torus and another manifold with non-trivial topology. And most importantly, the system exhibits long-range many-party entanglement. So the first two properties are not so easily checked numerically, but the third property is indeed verified soon after two independent DMRG works. Basically, people study the entanglement entropy, which is defined as the monomial entropy of a reduced density matrix after a bipartition of the system. So they found out that the entanglement entropy satisfies area law in the leading term, and there is a constant sublinking term, which has a value which is very close to universal value log 2. So one can show that for a topological order state in two dimension with time Russell symmetry, the only possibility to have a topological entanglement entropy log 2 is either a Z2-SPIN liquid or a double semion model. So here we'll focus on the possibility of Z2-SPIN liquid. So so a simple toy model for Z2-SPIN liquid is the toric code model. So it's composed of a bunch of local projectors, including a type of vertex term and a type of plaquette term. So vertex term is a product of four spin operator sigma x around the vertex. So toric code describes a system of spins living on the links on a square lattice. And the plaquette term composed of four spins which live on the links around one plaquette. So you can see all these vertex term and plaquette term that commute with each other. So the ground state is described by a bunch of spins with a bunch of constraints. The constraints are essentially the vertex term and the plaquette term. All of them has to be equal one. If you just count the degree freedom in the system, you find out the number of spins is given by 2 times Lx times Ly. If we put the system on a cylinder, on a torus with the size of Lx times Ly. And if you count the number of constraints from the local commuting projectors in Hamiltonian, you find out there's a Lx, Ly vertex terms, Lx, Ly pocket terms. So number equals to each other. It suggests that, it seems to suggest the system have unique ground state, but turns out there's some redundancy in these constraints. All the constraints, pocket term and vertex term, they're not independent. For example, the product of all the vertex terms equals one, and the product of all the pocket term equals one on a torus. So that means there are only two Lx times Ly minus two independent constraints in the system. That suggests the system actually supports fourfold ground state degeneracy on a torus. So this is the ground state. Let's now take a look at the excitation in the system. So there are three types of excitation in the system. One of them is called the electric charge B. So it's when you want to create a pair of electric charge B, you essentially create a pair of string of spin flips along Z direction. And another type of excitation is called magnetic vortex, which is obtained by creating a string of spin flips along X direction. So here, when you look at the end of such a string of Z spin flips, you see that the vertex term is violated at the end of the string. So this is one type of excitation which violates the vertex constraint. On the other hand, for the magnetic vortex excitation, it violates the Plaquette constraint. And one can actually show that there is a mutual statistic between this electric charge excitation and magnetic vortex excitation, which is contains fractional statistics. So in other words, if you move a, you can essentially move a, for example, magnetic vortex excitation by flip spinning the system. If you move this excitation around one electric charge excitation and then get back to the original position, you find out that the Berry phase obtained in this process equals to the eigenvalue of the two, the product of the two vertex term living on this vertex and this vertex. On this vertex, due to the constraint, the vertex term equals to plus one. On the other, on this vertex, because there is an electric charge excitation, the constraint is violated. So the vertex term here equals minus one. Therefore, in total, system has a Berry phase minus one after this exchange, after this braiding process. So this suggests that the mutual statistic between electric charge and magnetic charge is minus one. That's what we call mutual semi-on statistics. So the third type of excitation is bound state of electric charge and magnetic charge. And you can easily show that it's actually a fermion, basically essentially due to this mutual statistic between electric charge and magnetic charge. And actually the mutual statistics between a fermion and an electric charge is also minus one, semionic. Okay, so so far we only focus on topological properties such as ground state degeneracy and anion statistics. But one actually should notice that toric code model also have a symmetry. For example, it has spin rotational symmetry. It's actually form a D2 group consists of a 180 degree spin rotation along X, Y, Z direction. So right now let's take a look at how these excitations transform under symmetry. So suppose right now I create a pair of electric charge in a system. So this is achieved by flip a spin sigma Z here acting on the ground state. So I want to look at how the system transforms under spin rotation along X direction by 180 degree. So you can show that the whole ground state obtained a minus one symmetry quantum number after the spin rotation. But notice that this, this state contains two excitations in the system. And since the two excitations are related to each other by mirror reflection symmetry along this line, so they must have the same symmetry quantum number under spin rotation. So we have two particles. So every one of them actually acquires symmetry quantum number plus minus I under the spin rotation. So when this symmetry acting twice on every vertex, you can see that the electric charge obtains a Berry phase minus one if we add the spin rotation twice. So this means actually the electric charge here contains a fractional symmetry quantum number for spin rotation. And similarly, if you look at the magnetic vortex excitation in the system, you should see the magnetic vortex contains the integer symmetry quantum number in the sense that when symmetry SX acting twice on every vertex, it gets a Berry phase plus one instead of minus one. So this basically means there are so-called symmetry fractionalization in the system in the sense that the electric charge or the magnetic charge could transform projectively under symmetry, for example, under spin rotation SX. So if we summarize the symmetric quantum number of the system, you'll see that for the anion types, electric charge, magnetic charge, and fermion, the symmetric quantum number for spin rotation along S direction is fractional, integer, and fractional. So the symmetric quantum number of fermion, because fermion is a bound state of boson and magnetic vortex, so the symmetric quantum number of fermion is always a product of symmetric quantum number for the electric charge and magnetic vortex. And for spin S0 rotation, you can see the electric charge transform carry an integer quantum number for the symmetry, but the magnetic vortex carry a fractional symmetric quantum number. And for spin SY rotation, both the electric charge and magnetic vortex carry a fractional symmetric quantum number of that symmetry, but the fermion carry integer symmetric quantum number. So this is only about symmetry fractionalization of global symmetries, because these are global spin rotational symmetry. We can also take a look at crystal symmetry. So symmetry fractionalization can still happen. For example, if you look at a fermion, which is a bound state of magnetic vortex and electric charge, right now let's act some symmetry on this fermion. Specifically, let's act C4 crystal rotation along the plaquette center. The plaquette is the same plaquette where the magnetic vortex sits on. So if I do C4 four times, you'll see that there is a string left after the motion of the electric charge. So the bare phase the system obtained after this 360-degree rotation, or the C4 rotation acting four times, equals to the symmetry eigenvalue of the plaquette operator. Because we have magnetic vortex here, plaquette operator has -1 eigenvalue. So the system acquires a -1 bare phase. That means the single fermion excitation would have a -1 bare phase when the C4 rotation acting four times under four fermions. So if we summarize for Torrey code model, if we use a crystal rotation acting four times, both the electric charge and magnetic vortex carry integer symmetry quantum number, but the fermion carry fractional ones. Under mirror reflection symmetry, for example, on x direction, all of them actually carries integer symmetry quantum number. And under translation symmetry, all of them carry integer quantum numbers. So we notice that in most cases, because the fermion is bound state of electric charge magnetic vortex, the symmetry quantum number of fermion is always a product of the symmetry quantum number for the electric charge and for the magnetic vortex. But the only exception is C4 rotation, essentially because when the C4 rotation acts by four times, there's an extra braiding between an electric charge and magnetic vortex that give rise to extra -1 bare phase for the fermions. So we've talked about all these symmetry fractionalization patterns. So how do we detect them? Are there any physical consequences for these symmetry fractionalization patterns? It turns out there is. It turns out that there are actually some edge state in the Torrey code model, which is protected by the spin rotational symmetry. So let's right now take a look at a system on a cylinder with Lx times Ly size. So y direction has priority boundary condition. So it's closed. X direction is open. So there are two edges of the system. So again, let's right now count the degree of freedom in the system. So notice that on the vertices living on the edge, there's no vertex term. Only in the vertices living in the bulk, there will be vortex term, which is a product of the force spin rotation along x direction around that vertex. So right now in the system, there are two Lx plus one times Ly spins. And also you have a bunch of vertices and plaquettes. You can show that the number of spins is larger than the number of constraints imposed by the local projector in the system. So that suggests that actually on each edge, there is Ly free qubits living on each edge. Because there are free qubits, they suggest there will be gapless excitation on the edge. You can just excite those qubits without cost any energy. So in order to freeze these free qubits, you have to add a proper boundary condition to the Torrey code model. So it turns out there are two types of boundary condition. One type of them, let's call them V-type. The physical meaning of V-type boundary condition is you condense the magnetic vortex in the system. So the Hamiltonian imposing such a boundary condition is a vertex term on the edge. It's a it contains a product of three spin flips along x direction around every vertex on the edge. So you can see such a Hamiltonian is odd under spin rotation along y and z direction, but only even under x direction. That means if the system have spin rotation along y and z direction, the boundary term will be forbidden. So this boundary term is only compatible with spin rotation along x direction. Another boundary condition is what we call a B-type boundary condition. So on that boundary, you will condense electric charge there. So it composed of a single spin flip term along z direction on the edge. So this term is odd under spin rotation along xy direction, but it's even under z direction. So for those experts, the theory is actually described by a U1 cross U1 transcendent theory. And you can write down those electric charge magnetic vortex on the edge and show how they transform under symmetry. So if we summarize, basically, if we have spin SX rotation, B-type boundary condition is incompatible. It's forbidden by symmetry. But the V-type boundary condition, you can condense the electric charge on the boundary. You can condense a magnetic vortex on the boundary. We can see that such a boundary condition has a correspondence with the symmetry quantum number of electric charge magnetic vortex here. Here, because the electric charge carry fractional symmetry quantum number of spin rotation SX, so that's why the boundary condition B-type is forbidden. You cannot condense vortex on the boundary because it carry fractional symmetry quantum number. On the other hand, if you look at electric charge carry integer symmetry quantum number, so you don't really care. You can condense it on the edge. So basically, the edge can be gapped by a V-type boundary condition. At the same time, with SZ spin rotational symmetry, you'll see that B-type quasi particle carry integer symmetry quantum number, and you can condense it. So there will be one compatible boundary condition. For V-type quasi particle, which is magnetic vortex, it carry fractional symmetry quantum number. There can be no allowed boundary condition. At the same time, if you have spin rotational SY symmetry, then both electric charge and magnetic charge carry fractional symmetry quantum number, and both boundary conditions are forbidden. Because both boundary conditions are forbidden, you must have gapless edge states. So that means the toric code actually have a symmetry protected edge states, which is essentially protected by spin rotation SY 180 degree. So there is some general conclusion behind this simple example. This says that if under a symmetry, both the electric charge and magnetic vortex transform projectively, or both of them have fractional symmetry quantum number under the symmetry, then the system must have a symmetry protected edge state. So this is the statement. And I also want you to pay attention to the inverse of the statement. If the system doesn't have any symmetry protected gapless edge states, that suggests that either the electric charge or the magnetic vortex must carry integer symmetry quantum number. So there cannot be symmetry fractionalization for either electric charge or magnetic vortex. The simple argument you can use to prove this statement is that you can shrink a cylinder into a very thin cylinder, which is essentially a one-dimensional chain. And the fact that there will be symmetry fractionalization or fractional symmetry quantum number suggests that this one-dimensional system must have gapless edge state on its boundary, similar to spin 1/2 on the edge of spin 1 Haldane chain. So this is a manifestation of gapless two-dimensional edge state in such a system. So this is the most important statement in this talk. And in the later part of the talk, I will apply this statement to actually a realistic system instead of a toy model like a Kitai model, and to make some statement about physical states in that system. So in a real system, we have SU2 spin rotation symmetry, for example, for spin 1/2, antiparamagnetic on Kagami lattice. So a general picture of the spin liquid is a resonating valence bound picture. So basically, the ground state is a quantum superposition of a bunch of dimer covering, singly covering of the spin 1/2 on the Kagami lattice. Here, this symbol means it's a singly bound state of the two spin. There are generally two ways to approach to describe such a general RVB wave function. These are two powerful variational wave functions, which we call slay particle construction or pattern construction. One of them is called Schringer boson construction. So we write the electron spin 1/2 into a bilinear combination of spin 1/2 bosons. These bosons are nothing but the electric charge we just mentioned in the toric code model. But here's the different thing that these bosons carry spin 1/2. The other way to construct a variational wave function of RVB state is to write a spin in terms of bilinear fermions, where every fermion carries spin 1/2. This fermion is also very similar to the fermion, which is bound state of electric charge and magnetic moment in a toric code model. So the idea of constructing wave function is that we first write down mean field state. We use a mean field approximation to study the motion of the bosons and fermion in the system. And then we get some mean field ground state. But in the mean field ground state, on every lattice side, there can be different number of boson and fermion particles. For example, it can be either 0, 1, 2 in a fermion case. But then we perform a Gauss-Weiler projection. We want to make sure that on every side, there's only one boson or one fermion in each case. And after that projection, we obtain a wave function with so-called resonating valence bond wave function, RVB wave functions. So the mean field state, roughly speaking, is a singlet pair superfluid of bosons in the Schrödinger boson state. In the Schrödinger fermion case, it's a singlet superconductor fermions, typically S-wave. It doesn't break time or so symmetry. So there are many different mean field ground state. Is there a way to classify them? Actually, the emergence of many different mean field ground state is related to immersion topological insulator, which we just learned recently. So the idea of topological insulator is that without any symmetry, with just U1 charge conservation, that just metal as an insulator. All the insulators are the same. But when we further implement symmetry, such as Hammersall, there are two types of different insulators, normal insulator and topological insulators. In order to go through from topological insulator to a normal insulator, you have to go through a metallic intermediate phase. So these are so-called symmetry protected topological states. But this state doesn't support fractional statistics. In our case with Z2 spin liquid, there are fractional statistics in the system. So without any symmetry, there's only one type of Z2 spin liquid. But when we implement a symmetry such as time reversal spin rotational symmetry and crystal symmetry, there'll be many different Z2 spin liquid characterized by their different symmetry quantum numbers. We call them symmetry-enriched topological states. So specifically in our projective construction, in our variation wave function of Schrödinger bosons and recursal fermions, one can show that in Schrödinger boson formalism, there are 8 different states. It's shown by Fawan and Vishwanath. So they try to classify different symmetry quantum number of Schrödinger bosons. Turns out they find out 8 different states. In the average recursal fermion construction, you find out 20 states. The idea behind this classification is so-called projective symmetry group first proposed by Xiaogang a decade ago. So the idea is that basically projective symmetry group is a pattern of symmetry quantum numbers, crystal symmetry quantum numbers for the Schrödinger boson and average fermion state. So suppose we know the symmetry quantum number for the Schrödinger boson, the boson excitation B, or the fermion excitation F here. We're supposed to fully determine the universality class of mean field state. And also we fully understand the universality class of projective wave functions. So the natural question is, what is the relation between these states? Suppose I look at a Schrödinger boson state. Is there a recursal fermion state which corresponds to the same boson state? Or in other words, is it possible that one state in this representation and one state in this representation belong to the same quantum phase? So that's the question we're trying to answer here. So the idea to answer this question is to understand the PSG projective symmetry group or the fractional symmetry quantum numbers of electric charge and magnetic vortex in the system. So in such a SU2 spin rotation symmetry, in such an RVB state, we call this electric charge a bosonic spin-on. It carries spin 1/2. And we call the magnetic charge a bison due to work by Sento and Matthew. And this bison carries spin 0. And there is fermionic spin-on, which is essentially a bound state of bosonic spin-on and bison. It also carries spin 1/2. So because they have half integer spins, the spin-ons transform -1 under time reversal square. But the bison carries symmetry quantum number +1 under time reversal. And there's also important property about the translation symmetry quantum number for bisons. Because every bison sees the spin-on as a pi flux due to their mutual semionic statistics. So the bison would actually would always see a -1 very phase if they go around every unit cell. Because right now in every unit cell, there are three spin-ons in every unit cell, odd number spin-ons. So the translation symmetry quantum number for fermionic spin-on is a product of the symmetry quantum number for bosonic spin-on and that for the bison. And similarly for reflection symmetry, if we know the symmetry quantum number for bosonic spin-on and bison, we also know that for the fermion. For reflection symmetry, there is actually one exception. If we know the symmetry quantum number for bosonic spin-on and bison, the symmetry quantum number for fermionic spin-on is a -1 sign times the symmetry quantum number for boson and bison. So the idea is that suppose right now I start from a Schrödinger boson state. If I can find out the bison symmetry quantum number in that Schrödinger boson state, I can determine the symmetry quantum number of fermionic spin-on state. And then I know which abrecoursal fermion state does it correspond to. So that's a rough idea. So in order to achieve this goal, we want to apply this conclusion I just mentioned earlier, which says that whenever both the bosonic spinon and bisons carry fractional symmetry quantum numbers, then on that edge, there must be gapless edge state. So when I say they carry symmetry quantum number, the symmetry must be preserved at the edge. Otherwise, it doesn't mean anything on the edge. So for those symmetry preserved on the edge, I want to use the symmetry quantum number to determine whether there exists a symmetry protein edge state or not. So one important conclusion for Schrödinger boson state is that Schrödinger boson state can never support symmetry protein edge states. This can be easily checked by just so Bogle-Wolf-Degen equation of the boson pair superfluid. You'll find out there's no gapless edge state. The rough idea is the following. Suppose you have bulk of Z2 spin liquid. This is the spectrum of that gapped spin liquid. In order for the spectrum to have a finite energy gap, the chemical potential must be larger than the pairing terms. So this is the bulk. In a vacuum, I just push the chemical potential to infinity. So the question is that when the chemical potential is large enough, in the process of pushing that chemical potential to infinity, no phase transition happens. Because there's no phase transition, so there won't be edge state if you make a boundary between the vacuum and the bulk. So that means there are no symmetry coordinated edge states in the Schrödinger boson state. Yes.
Why you're going infinity? Then it looks like there's no transition. Because on one side you have a
there is no
spin liquid. The when you go you get very large, it's still little spin liquid.
That's right.
So that's not a vacuum.
That's right. But what I'm trying to say topologically, you mean they have different topological order?
Yeah, the vacuum they have a different topological order.
Yeah, but when chemical potential is infinity, there is no particle at all. So there's no meaning of the.
Oh, I see. It's really.
It's like a really. Or you can just do an open boundary.
But this transition must be. There must be gap closing somewhere. Because if you say one side has a equal, the other, another side is nothing.
You're right.
Something,
absolutely right. So the point is that I'm computing the edge spectrum of a mean field Hamiltonian for the parasuperfluid.
Okay.
So that's what I'm computing. So when I impose Z2 gauge fluctuation in the system, then I suppose that could describe the real Z2 spin liquid state. But I assume that Z2 fluctuation is not so important. So just use the result of the mean field state to say whether there is an edge mode or not. And if you just look at mean field state, then there is no phase transition. These are essentially the same state. So there won't be any gapless edge mode.
Yeah, but I'm a little bit concerned about this boundary is a boundary between two different versions of these two states. Then one don't expect any gapless excitation.
To which one really think about is that even if you take this to be a vacuum, to be a Z2 topological ordered state, but it's a totally trivial Z2 topological ordered state. So the eventual boundary of that to the true vacuum doesn't have any exotic edge, which means this edge, if this is also non exotic, then that's it.
Yes, So if we can agree that there won't be any edge state on the boundary of a Z2 spin liquid and a vacuum, of a Schrödinger boson state and vacuum, then we can basically use this conclusion to say that there's no symmetry fractional laser on the edge.
So this is taking the Schrödinger boson and mean field theory, the level of quadratic Hamiltonian.
That's right.
Once you go beyond that, the Schrödinger boson state can obviously have symmetry protected edge state.
Yes, I assume so. There are examples, you mean? You mean just like a SPT or something?
I can put the string of both Which so obviously requires interaction between the both.
Right. But that's like it's not described by quadratic Hamiltonian. Yeah. I'm just trying to unify the.
Probably somewhat as equal to liquid at that point.
It's still discoverable within string of both.
I know, but. Yeah. This is Schrödinger boson in short form for certain classes.
For Schrödinger boson mean field states.
Yes, mean field
states. It's a short hand for that.
Yeah, so the H is not a complete classification.
Probably.
Even the Schrödinger boson.
All right, fine. Yeah.
But it's just, yeah, it's a systematic way to construct classification. Generally, it's hard to, I mean, if you go beyond mean field, I don't know, there's an uncontrolled way to. You mean just the SPT and so on?
Yeah, exactly. We have to do mean field plus SPT.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Okay. Okay. So, right now, we established the fact that for shrinker boson mean field states, there is no edge mode between a vacuum and a bulk Z2 spin liquid. So the next thing we're going to do is to use this to establish certain symmetry quantum number on the edge. Because we said that on the edge, there can be no symmetry fractionalization for at least one of the quasi particles between a bosonic spinon and vison. But bosonic spinon always have symmetry fractionalization. It carries spin 1/2. Spin 1/2 is a projective representation of SO3 spin rotation symmetry. So Schwinger boson, bosonic spinon already carries fractional symmetry quantum number. So the fact that there is no edge state in Schwinger boson suggests that vison must carry trivial symmetry quantum number for any symmetry. So it doesn't carry any fractional symmetry quantum number. So suppose right now I have this x edge. There's a translation symmetry T1. There is a reflection symmetry with respect to this axis. There is time reversal symmetry and spin rotational symmetry. You want their algebraic relation to be completely trivial so that it doesn't support any symmetry fractionalization on this edge. There's another independent different kind of edge. On that edge, you also have a translation symmetry, a longer translation. You have a mirror reflection, reflection Ry, and you also have time reversal and so on. So you also want those algebraic relation to be simple for these vison. All the symmetry generator commute with each other. In that sense, it doesn't have any fractional symmetry quantum number. So if you apply those constraints, you obtain such a symmetry quantum number for the crystal symmetry quantum number and time reversal symmetry quantum number for the bisons. So actually, surprisingly, this result actually agrees with the next explicit calculation performed by Subir and other people. So knowing that we have a bison symmetry quantum numbers, and we also have the quantum number for Schwinger bosons, we can essentially establish the Schwinger the fermion symmetry quantum number. And then we can establish a relation between the Schwinger boson mean field state and the Abrikosov fermion mean field state. And the result is the following. So it turns out among those 8 states of Schwinger boson, only 4 of them have a correspondence with Abrikosov fermion state. Among them, there are 2 states which have good energetics. One of them is called So in the Schwinger boson context, it's called Q1 equal to Q2 state. So it's first proposed by Subir. And then recently, LASIK showed that such a state have a good variational energy in a J1, J2 model on Kagami lattice when J2 is slightly larger than 0. It has better energy than most other variational wave functions, including order state and gapless spin liquid. And there is another state which we call Z2 zero pi beta state. It's in the neighborhood is so-called U1 Dirac spin liquid. We know this state has a very good energetics. So Z2 zero pi beta state essentially open up a superconducting gap on top of the Dirac fermions or fermionic spinons. So previously we conjectured that these two states might be the same, but right now it turns out they are not the same. Basically, they have different symmetry quantum numbers.
No,
there isn't. Yeah. So, there is one. Sorry. This is 0, 0, 0 state. What Phi and Ashwin calls it. Yeah, but that state doesn't have nearest neighbor, second neighbor pairing. It only allows fourth neighbor pairing. That's the nearest range. So yeah. So one fact is that if the fermion state have a short range Hopian pairing, then the corresponding boson state seem to have a long range pairing, and vice versa. So it turns out, although Schwinger boson state doesn't support symmetry per data edge mode, the Abrikosov fermion state does support the symmetry per data edge modes. As long as that edge preserves reflection symmetry and reflection square acts as -1 for the fermion spinons. So this is related to topological crystalline superconductor of fermionic spinons. And you can show that such a state can be described by 4x4 K matrix using the transaminant theory. So with this, I'd like to conclude and maybe point out a few potential development in the future. So first, right now, since we established a relation between the Schwinger boson state and the Abrikosov fermion state, Schwinger boson state, we know it's good to describe the magnetic order phase in the neighborhood of spin liquid. And the abrecosal fermion state can tell us what's in the neighborhood of the Z2 spin liquid. Could there be any gapless spin liquid? And it also gives us good hints about what's the superconductivity developed upon doping such as Z2 spin liquid. So we can possibly establish a phase diagram around the Z2 spin liquid ground state at the Heisenberg point. And also, we could apply this conclusion to any other lattice, such as square lattice, where J1, J2 model is some signature of Z2 spin liquid. And also, actually, this relation between the Weissmann quantum numbers and the topological crystalline insulator. So basically, there's some relation between topological crystalline insulator and Z2 spin liquid. So if the Z2 spin liquid have non-trivial Weissmann quantum number, then the corresponding topological crystalline superconductor for fermionic spin now. So with that relation, it may help us understand interaction effects on topological crystalline insulator, a superconductor. Okay, with that, I'd like to conclude, and thanks for your attention.
Yeah, just a bit confused now. So, what's the right answer for the classification? Is there 20 phases or more than 20 phases?
Yeah, these are actually, I think, much less than a full classification because we only look at a specific pattern construction. And also, we're looking at a specific pattern construction, you know, this abrecosal fermion.
Yeah.
So that pattern construction is biased. It has its own limitation. So you don't expect to describe everything.
No, but if you try to do, you know,
you mean if you include many other bands or so on, that may give you more states.
So you don't know if even the 20 is complete.
No, it's not. Right. We know it's not complete.
But it's you know, if you try to address this question through other methods, you know, K matrix or something like that, just think about it sort of generally. And try to incorporate spatial symmetry, you know, space time.
Right, right. I think
add a symmetry into K matrix.
So yeah.
So
we have some clue of how to do that. For example, in this case with mirror reflection symmetry, yeah. We can do that. But I think the key issue about K-matrix, as you know well, is that you don't know how to fix the size of K-matrix. You can always add trivial blocks. Yeah. So you don't know where to end. There's no cutoff.
You don't know. Infinite dimensional
yeah. Well, that's in principle, but no one in practice can actually do that. So that's the main issue. So if you fix the size of K-matrix, then I think I would know that. Yeah.
But you know how to include spatial symmetry in the game?
For translation, I know. For mirror reflection, I know. For rotation, I'm not so sure right now.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and also inversion, I think I also know. Yeah.
So, do any of the fermionic Z2 spin liquids have gapless
identities? Which one of them? Oh, it's okay. Yeah. So okay, I really don't want to show this table. It was originally in this.
So this is the case with some
T
plus IP pairing or something.
No, this is not. This is S wave.
They're all S
wave. Yeah, this is S wave with mirror reflection. So without mirror reflection, we'll never get edge mode.
Okay.
But with mirror reflection, you can see on one edge there's a right mover and left mover. The right mover and left mover are both degenerate. So here this is edge state on one edge. This is edge state on the other edge. So this is right mover, left mover. Right mover and left mover. So right mover is twofold degenerate, both spin up and spin down, right? Because singly superconductor. Left mover is also spin up, spin down. So basically,
this has SU2
symmetry. Yes, that's right, that's right. So yeah.
Why is that topological? The bands kind of come up from the bottom and then come back down to the bottom, right? They don't kind of connect the upper and lower parts.
You mean, sorry.
Follow the thing round, it goes up. Comes back down again after two crossings.
Oh, this one?
Yeah. I mean, they don't connect the upper and lower parts.
Right. So the topological.
They're not topological, right?
Actually, we check the spin rotational, like how does symmetry act on them. You can show there's no backscattering term allowed.
Then the other feature, like, comes up from the bottom.
Yeah, right? Yeah, you're right.
It comes back down again, so that's not the character of a topological insulator.
It's not chiral.
Yeah, it's.
And not even that, they don't connect the top and bottom bands like they ought to.
Okay, I may use the wrong figure. So there are a bunch of figures. So actually, in this case. So in this case, you can numerically track down how these edge state transform under symmetry. Basically, you can check how symmetry, right mover. Yeah, yeah. So, and you know there's actually no backscattering term between them. Yeah.
More questions?
Yes.
How much the eight Schrödinger boson does that overlap with on the
sorry?
Does the eight phase of this Schrödinger boson
okay. Oh yeah, the four of them overlap. So
what?
The four of them overlap.
Yeah.
No, 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 it doesn't. So the only the 16 Abrikosov fermion doesn't have any correspondence to the boson. There are four of them. That's right. That's right. Four bosons that are not in the fermion state. Only four of them are there.
I guess another question.
Yes, yes.
So Lucas was telling us or refusing to tell us about. can you read off from this what the time reversal breaking that preserves the SU2 or whatever would do to the
oh you mean on the edge or
to this you want to have the Kagame but added this S cross S S dot S cross S term which breaks time reversal but
oh yeah yeah it's Kairos-spin liquid so
you see what these things do when you put such a perturbation on it just from the character table there or
they are not here they have different topological order than this one this is Z2 spin liquid at electrogenic yeah so for that state, actually, we know what it is. So I think Kairos spin liquid, I think that actually Matt Hastings first proposed this. So you know, there's a.
If you put a little perturbation of that type, can you see what it would, what the time reversal perturbation?
Okay. Time reversal breaking perturbation, right? Okay, yeah. So what I can say is that if you look at the fermionic representation, Abrikosov fermion representation, this Z2 spin liquid is very close to the U1 Dirac spin liquid, that Dirac Holmes. So if you add a time reversal breaking perturbation to that, then it will open up a quantum anomalous Hall gap. That's a Kairos spin liquid. Yeah. Yes.
So look at your 16, right? That's the one that you're saying is Subi's Q1 equals Q2 state.
Okay. Yeah.
Now you have to once I make this identification, there's two wave functions you can write down. One is the fermion wave function, the other is the boson wave function.
Yes.
Two wave functions for the same phase, they may have different energy states.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's right.
So, the boson thing is very hard to calculate the energy of, but
mm-hmm.
okay, Lissig says it's good.
Yeah, but the thing is, I think fermion state. There may be some issue. So, here, in order to get a gap spin liquid, so as I said here, it's not perturbative gap. So here, both this state and this state are in the neighborhood you run.
Yes.
So if you add a perturbation, it doesn't open up gap. You have to add long-range pairing and so on, very large perturbation. Yeah, so it may not be so good. Yeah. So
perturbative gap means in the neighborhood you run.
That's right. Yeah. But actually, these two states are not in the neighborhood. So perturbative gap means up to certain neighbor, something. Or if I start from first neighbor and start and then add perturbation, does it open up a gap or not?
No. When you say no for perturbative gap, you mean there's still some quadratic pairing term that you can add. It just involves some longer neighbor pairing.
But you cannot think of that as perturbing a Dirac fermion. So perturbing Dirac fermion, assuming that nearest neighbor is dominant, and then you add some small perturbation, right? But the thing is that for this state, in order to get a gapped state, you have to add a very large second and third neighbor term, which is much larger than the nearest first neighbor. Yeah, so only in that case you get a gapped state.
I see. So the energy may be quite bad.
That's right.
I see.
So
this function would be